Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks and move. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 153. Just ahead, is HCA Healthcare showing the rest of us just where the latest bout of inflation could be permanent? And we're going to continue digging into the boating industry, where companies are saying one thing, but the market is saying something else. And the big crypto interview you've all been asking for, we're going to talk to Riot Blockchain. They've got a unique source of cheap power, which promises a big bump in Bitcoin mining. Riot Blockchain CEO Jason Les tells us about what he's calling the industrial era for crypto. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, A-I-E-R-A.com.
And there are so many ways to listen to the Drill Down podcast, not least of which, tune in iHeart, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, iTunes. On all of these platforms, you can subscribe and follow us. That way, you make sure to get every single show.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
And I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got the business stories behind stocks and a move. And we also have Isaac Webster, our executive producer, joining me from Los Angeles.
Hello, Corey.
How's Los Angeles?
It's always the city of angels. So it's perfect. Just perfect in every way.
It's getting to be that time of year. It's perfect. Yes. Not quite yet June gloom.
Right. Exactly. It's actually been really nice and hot. So it's been really great. Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
I'm going to look at HCA Healthcare.
HCA Healthcare trades under HCA and shares have gained just under 5% over the past 12 months. But the shares have dropped over 20% this month, April 2022. What's going on with HCA Healthcare?
Yeah, dramatic fall in the stock price. It's fallen right off a cliff in the last week after reporting earnings. And what's going on with these guys? Well, first, let's talk about the company. Nashville-based, giant operator of healthcare facilities. And, you know, they reported disappointing profits, I guess, for those who set their hopes and their heart's desires on profits from this company. I don't, you know, that's shorthand for people who don't know the company. They did cut their guidance, saying that rather than the $61 billion that Wall Street expected them to earn, they would earn $60.5 billion in revenues. Okay, big cut, not really. But what they talked about on the conference call, and what they blamed for the cut in their guidance when some perhaps hoped that the company would continue to grow, was an interesting post-COVID change in their labor cost. Which is to say they're going to get away from the expensive travel nurses and the contract labor that they've been relying on, but they're going to have to raise their cost per hour of the people that they do keep. So during COVID, as you may know, and you saw some inside the hospital time during COVID, I think a lot of us did, God knows I did, there have been these travel nurses, these nurses who go to where the jobs are, who get paid often a lot more. I think it's coming to a primetime drama near you, the travel nurses, or maybe CSI travel nurses. What do you think?
That'd be a great show. I know some travel
Hollywood
nurses.
How do you pitch these things?
But travel nurses are always in high demand pre-COVID, during COVID, post-COVID. So how are they going to cut back on travel nurses?
HCA says they're going to get away from contract labor, but they're going to raise what they pay their existing people. And the result is kind of a permanent increase in the cost of labor for these guys. And That is the thing about this inflation, right? This inflation that every company is talking about, is it transitory? How much of it isn't transitory? How much of it are we just going to get used to? Are the price increases going to stay? Are the labor price increases going to make up for, you know, if we all get paid 10% more and our costs go up 8%, we're all happy. The problem is that's not what's happening. Certain people are seeing big pay raises, other people aren't. Apparently nurses at HCA are going to see increases, but the travel nurses will be used less. That increased cost of contract labor in the last quarter, which they said was really tied to COVID surges, will go away for HCA. But the permanent cost of average hourly rates for contract labor are probably going to go higher. Here's HCA CFO Bill Rutherford.
We are experiencing, you know, elevated cost per hour of that contract labor, principally, we believe, related to the COVID surges. Our plans going forward are to continue to reduce the utilization of that contract labor and eventually moderate the average hourly rate that we're having to spend for that contract labor. But we think that moderation will be slower than we originally anticipated. So that's what's based into our assumptions, and it's basically influenced with what we saw in the fourth quarter.
So fourth quarter will beget, of course, a first quarter, but I think many quarters of increased labor costs. And yes, Isaac, I think that is not a thing that is limited to HCA Healthcare.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Hewlett-Packard Enterprise.
Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, HPE, has shares have fallen 4% over the past 12 months, underperforming the broader market, as we know. What's going on with HPE?
Well, let's remember, so when Hewlett-Packard split up post-Meg Whitman as CEO, or in the process of becoming post-Meg Whitman, they split up into a Hewlett-Packard and Hewlett-Packard Enterprises. And the enterprise business focused on, yes, the enterprise, more kind of pure computing, less selling PCs and more things like that. So the company reported a really strong quarter in the most recent quarter. I think it kind of got ignored. And it shows the positive signs of the economy, in particular the world of tech, where spending is just increasing. And the way people do the things that they do are increasingly digital and much to the benefit of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Now, company specifically showed some really strong demand across the board for their products. Their company backlog, $4 billion above where they might be at this point. So they're filling orders as fast as they can. They've got more orders to fill. That's really positive for them. So it suggests that strong earnings and cash flow going forward will happen to a company that's really been beaten up over the years. In particular, their Aruba business, Aruba Networks, formerly Aruba Wireless, a company that they'd acquired, doing very well. And of course, in January, the company benefiting from screwing up in the past, which is to say, under a prior management, as mentioned before, they bought this company, Autonomy, which was accused of being a giant accounting fraud. There was a big roll-up of lots of software companies. A UK judge ruled in HPE, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise's favor concerning that acquisition of Autonomy, saying that Autonomy executives did indeed book fake deals and other illegal actions that jacked up the revenues and made the numbers look really good, convincing Hewlett-Packard to buy the company when in fact the numbers were phony. As a lot of short sellers suspected at the time, there was a big short interest in the stock. A lot of people would have told Hewlett-Packard, don't do this deal. This thing's a roll-up full of problems. Hewlett-Packard didn't want to hear it at the time. They just wanted to boost the top line. That actually helping their bottom line. Here we are nearly a decade later after that acquisition. But there was an interesting sit-down, a fireside chat. I think that phrase has got to go away.
Why? I mean, love the phrase.
No one does fireside chats.
No, but
it isn't
cares?
A thing.
But it's just a figure of speech.
It doesn't mean anything anymore. Stop saying it.
What means anything at all?
Okay, if that were true, let's just stop talking.
Right.
I mean, let's actually have words mean something.
Fireside
chat was meaningless
podcast
before COVID. So at a fireside chat where there was presumably not a fire, nor was it really, well, there was a decent chat. Tariq Robietti, the CFO and EVP at Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, had an interesting chat with a Stiefel analyst talking about the demand environment that they're facing right now, that it's really super strong for Hewlett-Packard Enterprises, and that all the doom and gloom that are in the headlines, whether of any kind right now, are not the case when it comes to the sales efforts at HPE. Here is indeed the HPE CFO.
It's a really very strong demand environment that we are facing. And the demand is very strong across the board. And Q1 was the third quarter where we had double-digit year-over-year order growth. We had 20% plus order growth overall. And we continue to have a very strong demand across every business unit in HPE. The order growth is very much aligned with the strategy that we have. So if you think about the edge, we're experiencing extremely strong demand in Aruba. Our hybrid cloud offerings in storage and supported by computer also very much in focus, and we see strong demand there too. And why is that? It's because the reality is that there is an ever-increasing amount of data that companies need to process, and this is fueling the growth from the edge all the way onto the private cloud and the public cloud. And then also our as-a-service business continue, therefore, to really do very well. Our order growth there was in triple digits in Q1.
So triple digit, no, but double digit, pretty good growth for Hewlett Packard Enterprises, Isaac.
It's very good growth. Corey, what's your next drill down?
Well, I want to stick with the nautical theme that we have adapted on a recent show that got me a lot of emails and messages on the Twitter. We mentioned Brunswick Products recently. Let's look at Marine Products, a competitor.
Marine Products trades under MPX and shares have inched barely higher, just about gaining 3% since the start of the year. But if you look out over a year, 12 months, they've tumbled 25% over the past 12 months.
Yeah, basically, and this stock has basically been flat since September, right? It's about $13 now. It was about $13 back last September. So it's kind of been in that range between $11 and $13 for most of the last 9 months. So this company, so first of all, let's back up and talk about the Drill Down Podcast. Enough about you. Let's talk about me. The Drill Down Podcast is not freaking investment advice. I'm not telling anyone what stocks to buy. I don't know what stocks to buy. I'm not telling you what stocks to buy. I'm not giving you investment advice. This isn't about investments. It's about business. So back up. And
why do you have to say all that?
Because Jim, he knows who he is, says, hey, I'm going to go out and buy this stock that you just mentioned. I think it was Brunswick or something. It was Marine. I'm like, no, dude, calm down. I'm not giving you investment advice. Don't do it. It's hit a bottom. You don't know if it's hit a bottom, Jim. I love Jim. Great guy, that Jim. But still. So I do think it's interesting, however, to hit these companies over and over again, different companies in the same sector, to kind of understand what's happening, particularly what they say is different than the prevailing opinion that's reflected either by a stock price or elsewhere. And so when we had comments from, in this case, from Brunswick that we talked about, I think it was last week, might have been the week before, where the market was saying inflation was going to hurt these companies. And on their conference calls, the company is saying it's not going to get hurt. Brunswick in particular is saying that. But why aren't the stocks responding to the positive comments of the companies? Well, one of the concerns, and this is something we can hear about in Marine Products, is a concern not so much what customer demand is, but whether or not they can satisfy that demand, whether they can find the boats to sell and build the boats to sell. And the problems that happen is you build a boat and you run into a problem. So this company, Marine Products, not a huge company, $300 million in sales, $500 million market cap. They make fiberglass power boats for sport boats and I don't know if you know these boats, Chaparral sports boats, sure. Robalo fishing boats, Vortex jet boats. These guys, in their last conference call, they're due to report earnings pretty soon here, but in their Q4 conference call, January conference call, they talked about how just a few components can really slow things down, whether it's a windshield or it's an engine issue or whatever. Here is their VP of Corporate Services, Jim Landers, talking on their most recent conference call.
Regarding actual components and various things, and you and I have discussed this before, it just kind of moves around. It's a different issue every week. Luckily, issues do get resolved, but then others pop up. I mean, earlier in 2021, engines were a big problem, but now we're fine on engines. We've had a problem off and on with our very valued windshield supplier. those issues kind of come and go. We've also had problems with some of the more basic raw materials like gel coat and some of the resins that you use. So those all sort of come and go. And unfortunately, what they've done is forced us to partially or mostly complete boats and wait for that final component. So if you ask us this week, we'll tell you one thing. If you ask us next week, we'll tell you that maybe this week's issue was resolved, but there's perhaps a new one. We do think these issues overall are going to get ironed out this year, but it's been tough going the past number of months.
So that was Jim Landers, not Jim, our devoted listener, who's a great guy. He doesn't know if it's a bottom on Brunswick or anything else. But I do think it's interesting to hear these companies really say that they've got customer demand and that they do see an end to these problems at some point. But filling the orders is the challenge. And I think when we look at the earnings from all of the companies in the boating sector, we're going to look and see if they were really able to cobble together some boats and get them out the door and report the earnings that I think Wall Street really isn't expecting. That's probably going to happen the next couple of weeks. It'll be an interesting one to watch. You going to buy me a boat for my birthday, Isaac?
You mean tomorrow?
We don't have to say when my birthday is, but I'm just saying.
You know what? I'll think about it.
Oh, really?
You deserve a boat, though. You talk a lot about boats.
And I'm not really much of a boating guy. Yeah.
You're not?
Sailboats. I like a sailboat. Yeah, nice.
Well, sailboat's a boat.
Yes, it is. Best kind. You know what the best kind of crypto is?
What?
Out of the kind that you bought at a lower price and sell at a higher price. I don't know. Or the kind that could be used for something. I don't know that Bitcoin can be used for a lot of things, but Bitcoin mining is a fascinating business. Riot Blockchain is a company devoted to Bitcoin mining and has found some interesting solutions to some common problems of trying to find cheap power. We're going to talk to the CEO, Jason Les, about Bitcoin, about crypto, and about mining right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com. That's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
Hey, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. As promised, we are joined right now by Jason Les. He is the CEO of Riot Blockchain, publicly traded crypto company, of which there are not many, which has surely been to your benefit, Jason. Glad to have you. As always, we don't want to talk about the stock price. I don't really care. I am interested. I am really torn about how to do this interview, though, because I'm still amazed that I talk to a lot of people who are completely dismissive of understanding crypto or blockchain or Bitcoin. And it's not as if these are the same people who would say, oh yeah, computer networking, I don't even understand it. Or you know, hydroelectric power, yeah, I couldn't possibly. Insurance, I'll never invest in insurance. Banking, I don't understand banking. But they're perfectly willing to say I'm a freaking moron when it comes to crypto, so I'm not going to try to understand it. I don't get that. I haven't really experienced that in other technology, really. I guess the dot-com era had that going for it.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. I mean, I think, you know, we've come so used to the internet and what have you now that I think we take it for granted. But, you know, I remember, you know, 25 years ago, people were skeptical of, hey, why am I going to send an email? I got a fax machine right here. What's the point of that? But to your
have
point
you heard of the mailman,
to your point of why it's different, you know, I think it's because cryptocurrency, or, you know, more specifically, Bitcoin, is a change in the way people think about money. And money is one of the most fundamental tools that humankind uses to interact with each other. So you have a banking system, you have computer networking, and, you know, people are just kind of accept that for what it is because that's a thing. But Bitcoin is really changing the way people do commerce and understand how money works. And I think because it's such a critical part of people's lives, like one of the truly foundational blocks of what we're doing every day, how we get supplies and goods and services amongst each other, that it really throws people for a loop when the entire worldview around it changes. But yeah, very interesting how skeptical some people can be, but also how accepting others can be.
Yeah, now, and I'll toss in that people don't really understand how money works now. They don't really know. I mean, The perfect evidence of this is the recent conversation about SWIFT and how it had to do with, as if it had something to do with Russia and sanctions. And,
right.
you know, oh, really, Russia won't be allowed to use a system that's got a 30% error rate in 3 days to close transactions and really high fees. And, you know, I think it's harder for people to really understand the velocity of money anyway right now. But let's leave that aside. Let's talk about Riot Blockchain and kind of some basic ways, and we'll maybe get a little bit into the weeds in our short time together. Riot Blockchain, as I see it, is essentially a miner. Is that correct? You guys create new Bitcoins by running math problems on computers as Bitcoin miners.
Yeah, we're a Bitcoin mining company. We run this hardware specifically designed for doing this Bitcoin mining algorithm, and we get Bitcoin as a reward for that. But beyond just that, we are builders of purpose-built Bitcoin mining infrastructure. We have a 100-acre site out in Rockdale, Texas. That's the largest site in North America and will probably soon be in the world. And we actually also internally have an electrical engineering subsidiary that designs and manufactures electrical components, both for Bitcoin mining and both for other industries as well. So while a Bitcoin mining company, we are very vertically integrated and have some tangential business lines as a result.
In Texas, everything's 100 miles away from each other, but Rockdale's only about 50 miles from Austin.
Yeah.
What does it look like out there? Why are you there?
It is incredible, you know, for so many reasons. And I still vividly remember the first time I drove up to that site to take a look at it. And despite being in Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining for many years, it was astonishing to see something of that scale. I think when people think about Bitcoin mining, you know, they maybe think about a warehouse somewhere or maybe a garage that has Bitcoin miners somewhere. But that Windstone site is a symbol of the industrial era that Bitcoin mining has gone to. So you're talking 100 acres. We have 7 buildings now, half of which are still under construction. That's 500,000 square feet of Bitcoin mining data center space. And it's next to a wonderful community, or near a wonderful community, not close enough to bother anyone. And it is incredible to see because of how much activity and building is going on there all the time. Every time I go there, the site looks different because there's been so much progress since the last time I'm there. So we take a lot of pride in that site, and we put a lot of effort into showcasing it and taking people out for tours so they can not only see what we as a company are, but they can see the level that Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining has reached in adoption.
And this was built by the Texas Power Authority, whatever that is. It's I forget the acronym.
ERCOT. So we built the site, or our team that we now is under Riot Blockchain built the site from scratch. It was an empty field, just like a little over 2 years ago. It was a completely empty field, and it was next to a point on the grid that had an abundance of power. One of the largest switch yards in Central Texas. And the reason that was is because this site was formerly an Alcoa aluminum smelting plant and a Luminant generation site, both of which shut down, went out of business years ago. But nonetheless, this point on the grid of the interconnecting to the ERCOT grid that you're referencing still remained. And there was a surplus power at that point. So Bitcoin mining is an ideal load to come in and take that excess power, and that's why we built out there.
And that power is not due to natural resources. It's not next to the power plant per se. You draw power from all sorts of sources, everything from coal to nat gas to wind to solar.
Yeah, we pull right from the ERCOT grid. And ERCOT gives a fact sheet on a monthly basis on, you know, what the generation looks like. So for March 2022, ERCOT was about 51% natural gas, 25% wind, 13% coal, 5% nuclear, 4% solar, and then other. And if you look at how it's changing over time,
the other is probably Texas a hamster running around on a wheel somewhere.
maybe some
a
guy,
lot of hamsters.
Some guy on a treadmill somewhere. But basically, right, Texas right. is the biggest producer of wind energy in the country. It has a super high potential in solar. So every year you're seeing more wind and solar being built and coal becoming a smaller and smaller part of that grid over time. And because of that, there's, volatility in that energy market on the supply of energy, and naturally there's volatility in the demand of energy. So loads like Bitcoin mining come in and help stabilize that grid by having the flexibility to buy power at any time, but also shut off at any time when demand is very high.
I've heard you talk in investor presentations, and you sound, pardon me, but sound defensive about the use of coal, which on one hand, I totally understand. On the other hand, I think who cares? It's really about you guys getting cheap power from however the grid decides to use it. I wonder investors, when you talk to them, they don't want to hear about coal. They're concerned about getting off coal. They're concerned about climate change. Is that personal? I'm just curious about your thoughts about that.
So in general, there is, especially recently, you know, ESG is a prominent topic. There are lots of investors, institutions, regulators that ask about that kind of stuff. But for me, more than anything, I just want to show people the numbers and the facts. I'm not taking a position necessarily one way or the other. You know, I explaining this is what, because a very common question is, what is your generation mix? Even if it's not, you know, specifically, hey, you know, in a accusatory manner, why aren't you using enough renewables? People want to know what the generation mix is. And Texas is such an interesting energy market and environment that I, you know, like to go into detail explaining what that mix is and explaining how that is changing over time. And that leads into why there's an opportunity for us in the power market in Texas. It's because of these renewables that create this volatility in supply. We help, you know, strengthen that grid, and we can make money by providing power when those generation sources aren't generating.
Yeah, I think of your business as being really, really simple to understand, but tell me, I'm sure it's not, nothing is, right? It just seems that way. But it seems to me that the inputs, it's really simple. The input is the cost of the machinery amortized over its useful life, which is only a few years, which is the mining equipment. The cost of the energy, which is, you know, why you pick the places you're at. And the output cost, and then you've got your overhead of 100 employees or so. And then you've got your output is the Bitcoin itself, which is a very volatile endpoint for, but really not super volatile as far as commodities go. Any commodity can jump by, as we've certainly seen this year, on any given moment by 20-30%. It's not uncommon to see that with commodities or currencies for that matter. And that's kind of the business. You make the thing, you sell the thing, and your input costs for the thing are very low. They're very knowable.
That is a succinct way of describing the business, but I think the complexity comes into scaling this business. Bitcoin mining is an arms race. Everyone is growing. Like the network, the Bitcoin mining network is substantially larger now than it was 3 years ago, 6 years ago, etc. It is a game of scale. And since we're a Bitcoin company, we are trying to mine as much Bitcoin as possible. We want to be if not the industry leader. And to do that, we have to continue to aggressively scale. So to do that, there becomes a lot of operational strategy. There's a lot of strategic thinking that goes into getting the most hash rate to maximize your Bitcoin mining output. And then there's a lot of strategy on the financing component of the business as well. It is a capital intensive business. And, you know, we have to be methodical in how we are maintaining our balance sheet and financing all this growth to keep or get to a pole position.
So here I am in Northern California. What's my cost of power per megawatt hour?
Oh man, it is. I have no idea. I mean, I'm in Southern California. I think we pay 25 cents a kilowatt hour. I don't even look at the bill anymore from that perspective.
And so you want to be paying less than 25 cents per kilowatt hour. I said megawatt per kilowatt. I'm not using them. I've got a lot of teenagers, but I'm not using a megawatt, per kilowatt hour. So if you're paying 25 cents in SoCal, which has kind of cheap energy compared to other places, some other places, what are you paying in Texas?
So our site in Texas had, for the second half of 2021, we averaged about 2.7 cents a kilowatt hour.
Oh my goodness. I thought it was closer to 8 cents when we first started that.
So. No. 8 cents would be pretty high. The industry average for Bitcoin mining is around 4 to 4.5 cents.
And you're at 2.5. Amazing. So let's shift locales to lovely Messina, New York. Mm-hmm. For those who haven't been, I've been to Messina, New York, Jason.
Oh, really?
Messina, New York is way the hell north of New York, right off the St. Lawrence River, near Canada. much closer to Ottawa or Montreal than it is to New York City or Buffalo or even Albany, probably. Well, Albany, certainly. So, what are you paying in Messina?
So that is with a third party host. So that energy, it's a very low cost, but I don't want to necessarily get into their private information, but it's a very, very competitive cost because there's a surplus of power.
It's cheap because they're close. Right. They're really close to a dam. Is a dam on the St. Lawrence?
I believe so. Yeah. So, it's also coincidentally, that was also formerly an Alcoa aluminum smelting plant. So these aluminum smelting plants use so much energy. They had these cheap energy things, but when they shut down, that capacity just remained out there. And the one next industry, big buyer power that made sense to come in was Bitcoin mining.
That's absolutely amazing. And that's sort of near the Thousand Island region.
Right.
Those familiar. And you guys initially started operations up there because you had a third party that was really doing all this work of site selection, building essentially the data center, finding the place that was optimal for data center usage, which coincides with the usage of Bitcoin equipment. I would imagine being cold up there for a good part of the year doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, exactly. Stepping back a little bit, Riot started mining Bitcoin from the very beginning. In 2018, we had a facility in Oklahoma City that was about 12 megawatts, which at the time seemed very big. And to put that in perspective, right now we're building out to 700 megawatts at our Winstone facility in Texas. So we had this 12 megawatt site, but we were looking to expand and we wanted to reduce our costs. Our total cost of production there was not quite as cheap as what we were looking for. So in early 2020, mid 2020, we left the Oklahoma City facility and we started utilizing this third party hosting facility called CoinMint. CoinMint is the one that identified that site and built that out to host other people's Bitcoin mining equipment. So by doing that, we one, reduced our operating costs, which is very important, but two, they had more capacity than we had at Oklahoma City. So that opened up a pathway for us to expand so we could focus on buying miners and getting them deployed there. While on a parallel track, we were surveying the marketplace, looking for infrastructure to acquire and build out ourselves. And that's when we found Winstone and we acquired that company and that facility in May of last year.
When you say acquiring miners, what you're referring to is the actual hardware, essentially computer servers that are or computers that are designated just to make Bitcoin. The chips are specialized for that. The storage is not on the unit itself. The fan on the devices, it's all optimized for that purpose.
Exactly. These machines, these miners are special purpose. You can call them servers, pieces of hardware that are designed for doing one thing. The Bitcoin mining algorithm, which is SHA-256. These machines are refined constantly. The manufacturers are trying to make them do as many hashes per second of that algorithm while using as little energy as possible. The only thing these machines do is mine Bitcoin.
Let's talk a little bit about that. We don't have a lot of time, but I want to get into that because this is obviously one of the biggest issues in the world right now about supply chain and the ability to get semiconductors. And you guys, rather be lucky than smart, it's good to be both. You guys acquired, you were in a contract to acquire a whole bunch of mining machines before the semiconductor shortage really made itself known. Is that right?
Yeah. So we were very forward thinking from that standpoint. We made that move to CoinMint in mid-2020. And on a parallel track, we were aggressively buying up as many machines as we possibly could. The market for Bitcoin wasn't great back then. Bitcoin had just, in March 2020, like everything else, crashed down, hitting lows of about 3,500, and made some recovery, but hadn't really taken off yet. But we believed in the long-term vision of Bitcoin. We believed in our ability to compete in mining. So we wanted to procure as much hardware as possible. So we started entering into multiple long-term purchase agreements throughout 2020 and beyond. And then when the Bitcoin market started taking off and early 2021 and the semiconductor market constrained even further, the prices of machines shot up dramatically. So we were buying these machines in 2020. I think we started buying them at around $2,200 a unit. And most recently machines were selling new for, around $10,000 to $12,000 a unit. So the prices have gone up considerably with all the demand and lack of supply.
So the machines cost $12,000 per unit. How long do these machines last? How many years are they good for?
So it's a question that we can really only guess around, because it depends on there's two concepts of the lifespan of the machine.
The advance of semiconductors, right? Like how much the next semiconductors, how fast they are and how cheap they'll be.
There's the competitive component, and then there's just the durability of the component. These machines are made pretty durable. Like, if you take care of them, they will run for a long time. But the competitive component is, you know, the most critical. How long will this machine, this level of semiconductor, be competitive versus whatever comes out in the future? And the one data point we have to work with is the last major machine before this generation. It's called the Antminer S9 by the leading manufacturer, Bitmain. That was released in summer of 2016. And that machine is still running today. If you have a low power cost, that machine is still profitable. So we're going on almost 6 years with that machine. And the advancements have only slowed down. That curve of improvement is just flattening out over time. So with this latest generation, the S19, you know, we're optimistic that it will last at least as long, if not longer. But, you know, that's the answer to that question is a function of what type of technological revolutions might happen over those coming years.
But why isn't that a function of Moore's law, which would say that which I know is a marketing principle, but it has actually proven out to be true, which is the cost of the semiconductor cuts in half while the performance doubles every 18 months.
Because it's not just a function of. Well, first off, I don't think Moore's law is necessarily playing out as previously thought. And it's not so much as getting more performance, but it's getting performance while using less and less power. It's the efficiency that's the key competitive component of these machines. How much hashes are you getting per joule of energy? And I think, distinct from what Moore's law is. And you can really only get so close to zero energy, right? At some point, you know, we're using energy.
You are going to use energy, right?
The first generations of these machines were, I mean, I couldn't even tell you what it was back then. Maybe, thousands of watts thousands of watts of energy were needed for every hash you were doing. And right now the leading hardware is doing 21 watts per terahash. So that the adoption has gone down. So we're down to 21 watts per terahash in efficiency, down from previously thousands. And there's really only so far it can go, short of some technological revolution that we cannot predict right now.
And I don't think so much of analysts on Wall Street, and yet they do have a presumption that your output is going to increase significantly in the next 12 months. What is that a function of?
That's primarily a function of all of these miner purchase orders that we've entered into. You know, we've purchased over 100,000 machines. So we have deployed and on purchased approximately 120,000 machines. And we have just short of, our last update was just short of 40,000 deployed as of the end of February. So we have about another 80,000 we're going to be deploying over the next 10 or so months. And that's what's driving the analyst estimates as we deploy
more
machines.
What's taking so long to plug those suckers in? Just plug them in the wall, get them going.
Well, it's receiving them from the manufacturer. So they produce them and they send them out on a monthly basis. So we receive a few thousand miners on a monthly basis. We receive them, we deploy them, we wait for the next batch, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, Jason, I've used a ton of your time, and I'm grateful for it. Jason Les is the CEO of Riot Blockchain. Definitely a company to watch, because it's really interesting what you guys are doing. Yeah, as simple as it is, it's even more interesting, perhaps. It's perfect for Texas. The oil business is simple. Stick a hole in the ground and see what comes out. That's kind of what you guys are doing with a power consumption basis. Riot Blockchain, CEO Jason Les, thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Corey.
All right, coming up next on the Drill Down Byte, we'll have one number about Riot Blockchain that will tell you a whole lot when the Drill Down continues.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to the Drill Down podcast not just on your phone, not just on your computer, but on your smart speaker. Just turn to that smart speaker. Perhaps it's an Amazon Alexa. You could say, hey, Alexa, play the Drill Down podcast. And you'll hear our latest show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following @DrillDownPod. And connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
right, we're back with the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. Isaac, how many acres do you think that the number will be there, our bite, the Rockdale, Texas facility that Riot Blockchain is now basing their operations at, how many acres do you think that takes up for the cheap source of power that they have?
I'm just going to guess, but I would say 10 acres.
100
acres.
Don't they say 100 down in Dallas, in Texas, outside of Austin? 100 acres.
Okay. Yeah, 100 acres.
It's huge.
That is huge.
Total capacity of 750 megawatts in that facility. So really, and just as he mentioned, 2.7 cents per watt, per kilowatt, I should say. Really fascinating that all the lengths at which other companies will go. I read a piece in a paper, I think it was the Wall Street Journal this weekend, that talked about how some private equity firms are finding shut down coal plants that they're firing up to mine Bitcoin. So while everyone else is moving away from coal, they're like, hey, this is cheap stuff. Pollutes the shit out of things, but we can make some Bitcoin.
Right, right. Well, I mean, Riot's answer some of those questions too in our interview, I believe.
Yeah, 100%. But maybe not going after restarting coal plants. Thanks for nothing.
Right.
Private equity. All right, you've been listening to Drill Down Podcast. We are so grateful for your time. We'd love to know what you think of the show. So hit us up with an email anytime or find us on Twitter at Drill Down Pod. I'm also at Corey TV on the Twitter. Love to hear from you. Maybe it'll be Elon Musk's own Twitter. Can't believe that. I always thought he'd eject me from a car, and maybe he'll eject me from Twitter too. He has blocked me from seeing his tweets on the Twitter. Mr. I believe in free speech. But I digress.
New
this
era.
This has been an episode of the Drill Down.
New chapter.
Yes,
new chapter.
Indeed. This has been the Drill Down. Isaac Webster is our executive producer. Ben Wilson is our editor extraordinaire. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network.